This is Joe Basso from Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm speaking with guitarist Paul Gilbert. Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Your new album has a really interesting title. It's called Silence Followed by a Deafening Roar. It's an instrumental guitar album. How do you prepare for recording an album all instrumentals? Obviously, the writing is different than writing songs with vocals.
Yeah, I think, any of my records have a lot of guitar on them, so I have developed kind of a routine for preparation, and that is usually learning some kind of a classical piece, usually a piano piece, on the guitar, because it really gets my fingers warmed up and gets my ears warmed up as well, and sort of gives me a standard to try to live up to. Not that I can ever live up to Bach, but at least it sets my sights high.
You worked with your wife, Emmy, on this record. She plays keyboards. What was that like, having to give her direction?
it's very easy, because she's a great musician and has perfect pitch. She's been playing classical piano since she was 3. So, a lot of times I'm actually asking her for direction. In a song like Norwegian Cowbell, I basically had the intro and was stuck and didn't know where to go from there. And she came in and had some ideas, and within about 5 minutes we had a song. So it's nice to have somebody in the house who's very musical. And for just the playing part of it, I suppose some of the styles were kind of new for her, because she, having grown up with classical, she hadn't played a lot of heavy rock or funk stuff before. But I think funk especially she really likes. The B3 organ is a lot of fun to play for her, so on a song like The Bronx she had a great time. She actually drew blood. She was doing so many organ glissandos that her hands were bleeding.
I have never heard of an organist drawing blood before. That's a first.
Well, she had to learn the glissando techniques very quickly, because she hadn't really played the organ much before. So she was like just doing it over and over again to perfect the sort of organish growls that you can get out of a B3. And she did it about 1,000 times in an hour, I think.
As we said, instrumental albums are different from, albums with vocals. Are there any instrumental albums that have served as benchmarks for you?
I think the most influential instrumental music for me was probably the Rush instrumentals that they would throw in occasionally on the records in the 70s and 80s. Songs like YYZ or La Villa Strangiata, I liked those a lot. And also a lot of the bands I was into as a kid had, even if they didn't do instrumentals, they had great instrumental sections. I mean, every Van Halen song had an amazing solo. And then there was, bands like UK that had a lot of great instrumental stuff. That was probably about as fusion-y as my ear got. And of course, classical music. I listened to a lot of classical over the years. And Yngwie, too. Yngwie had some amazing stuff, which was more sort of metal and classical put together. But I think, the biggest thing was the guitar instrumental music that people were probably the most familiar with was what sort of began in the mid-80s, with Joe Satriani and Steve Vai and Tony McAlpine, Vinnie Moore, all the shrapnel people. And I sort of stubbornly held out, trying to be in a band with a vocalist, being in Racer X and Mr. Big, and it wasn't until I did my previous album, Get Out of My Yard, that I sort of decided, I'll see what I can conjure up in this forbidden art form of instrumental guitar. And it was a lot more fun than I expected, and the audience reacted really well to it, and I actually liked to listen to it, so it surprised me.
I'm curious as to your reticence, because you are such a great player and have had such acclaim that you held out for so long.
I just always wanted to be a rock musician. I didn't, to me, there was always a little bit of, I don't know, like Star Trek, Dungeons and Dragons nerdiness to being an instrumental guitar player. It like wasn't quite as cool as having David Lee Roth in the background hooting and hollering. and that's just, that's what I grew up listening to, was bands with vocalists. So I think that's where the stubbornness came from. I just, was trying to follow my heroes. It took me a long time to build up the courage to try something else. But when I finally did, I mean, like, the best experience I had from it was almost immediately after doing my first instrumental record. I found myself on the G3 tour,
right,
and that was really 100% a great time. The audience was great. The two other guys on the bill, Joe Satriani and John Petrucci, were both fantastic. You know, backstage, in person, and on stage, jamming. The whole thing was just great.
You're no slouch, of course, on the guitar, but was it a little daunting going on a tour with two heavyweights, like Joe and John?
Well, it was really inspiring. For me, it was the ultimate practice motivation, because I was the opener, so I'd do my show first, and then there would be about an hour and a half, approximately, where John and Joe would do their sets, and then at the end we'd all do the jam session. So I had about an hour and a half after playing my set, when I was all warmed up, and to get ready for the next part. And those were some of the most intense practice sessions I've ever had. You know, it was just really inspiring and motivating backstage, knowing that that's coming up, and preparing for the jams that we do. And I really built my vocabulary and phrasing techniques. Really got a lot better from that.
One of the fascinating parts about listening to this record is sort of sussing out the influences that are all over it, like on the title track. To my ears, it seems like you're influenced by The Edge a little bit.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Oh, there you go.
You know what? I've never sat down with a U2 record and figured out a lick, but it's a great-sounding band, and I've certainly listened to them a lot. And just I'm trying to think where that song... I mean, that song began as a heavy metal riff. I mean, the part that it ends up being kind of the verse, is much more or less sort of a Queensryche kind of riff, I'd say. But, looking for something to contrast it, I found myself playing these chords, and, just the texture that I found myself going towards was definitely more the edgy.
Mm.
And, so it was just sort of where my ear led me, but I was happy to have been led there.
And in the song, help me with the pronunciation, Eudaimonia Overture?
Oh, I have no idea, I'm guessing it's the word is probably pronounced eudaimonia.
Okay. The riff is based around harmonics, which also sounds, vaguely Edge-like.
Oh, let's see. Well, there's so many riffs in that song. That's sort of an insane arrangement, because I wrote it very much sort of stream of consciousness. I just, began with that first riff, and it just went from there, and I kept sort of planning on going back and making an arrangement where things would repeat, like they would in a pop song. And by the end of it, I thought, I like it like this, where it just keeps going to a new part and a new part, and it never goes back. So it's definitely a journey for the ear. The very intro, which is this insane two-handed thing, was actually the last thing I wrote for it, because that was sort of fulfilling the shred guitar obligation, because I, especially on the last record, the Get Out of My Yard, I did this crazy thing with a human capo and a three-string guitar tuned in octaves, and it really was a sort of face-melting piece of guitar. And I thought, what can I do on this one? It's got to have something that will melt some faces. So that became the beginning of the song. But the rest of it was written in about, 20 minutes. It was really just spilled quickly out of my brain.
One of the most rockin' songs on the record is Norwegian Cowbell, which sounds a little like there's some ELO influence in there, their song Do Ya.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's all kinds of classic guitar riffs that have those holes in them. There's like Stone in Love by Journey. And,
yeah.
About just about every AC/DC song ever written. And, I'm trying to think. I think that song was inspired by a deadline, which was I always have my official deadline from the record company, but in order to make that work, I end up inflicting artificial deadlines on myself. And one of them is I'll have my drummer, Jeff Bowders, come over a few times a week, and I know when he's coming over, and usually, I want to have something prepared to play with him, and, I'll know he's coming over at 7 o'clock at night, and right around 6:45, I'll have the panic will set in, and I'll realize I really don't have anything that I'm excited about that's any good. Jeff's coming over, I've got to have something cool to play with him, And in that last 15 minutes, I'll write, you know, entire songs and the best riffs that I'll be able to come up with, you know, from that fear and panic and impending deadline. So that was one of them. That song, you know, was like, oh my God, Jeff's coming over. I've got to have something cool. So that came from just panic and desire to have something cool to play with Jeff.
It's funny when you listen to a record, you pick apart the chemistry that you can hear in the music, and it seems like you and Jeff have a really good rapport with each other.
Well, Jeff's of course an amazing drummer, but one of the things that he really does well is I recorded, the way I actually produced the album was after writing the demos and having the basic arrangements, I laid down a click track and recorded all the guitars and actually overdubbed the drums and bass at the end. And when I do that, basically, you know, all these guitars are keeper guitars. They're the ones that are going to go on the record, and they're, you know, with the click. And I just make a CD of that for Jeff. Mm-hmm. So he's got about a week where he can play with the real guitars. And he's great at like, coming up with things that, you know, that I wouldn't have thought of, but you know, maybe I'll do there's some guitar part that will inspire a fill, and then he'll play along with me. And it's something that's, you know, that never would have happened live, you know, or that I wouldn't even have planned on, you know, it would just be beyond me to plan on that level of complexity. And, but because he's got a week to work on the stuff and works on it pretty hard, I'm guessing, you know, we get some really magical moments. And, you know, when we do go to play it live, it's really a blast to reproduce that.